Welcome to another episode of For Legal English Podcast. If you're a lawyer or law student seeking to navigate the intricate world of real estate law with confidence, you're in the right place. Today, we're diving into real estate vocabulary made easy. Deeds, mortgages, and zoning simplified. Whether you're a seasoned attorney or just starting, understanding these essential terms can make or break your real estate deals. Stay tuned for a simplified breakdown that will empower you in the complex realm of real estate law. The For Legal English podcast is now in session. Welcome to the For Legal English podcast. This is the show for lawyers, law students, and other professionals from all over the world who want to improve both their legal English and legal knowledge. In this podcast, we discuss different legal topics, such as law in the news, law in practice, legal writing, legal movies, and other issues. This podcast does not constitute legal advice. If you need legal advice, consult an attorney. You can check out our blog articles, available courses, and the show notes for this episode on our website. That's four as in the number four, legalenglish, no spaces or dashes, .com. Forlegalenglish.com. I am Timothy Barrett, your host. I'm a former practicing attorney from the United States, more recently a law professor in Tbilisi, Georgia, and currently an author and podcast host, among other things. Hello and welcome back to the For Legal English podcast. I'm Timothy Barrett, your host, and I'm thrilled to be your guide through the world of legal terminology. Today, we're diving into a topic that's not just vital, but also fascinating, real estate vocabulary. Now, I know legal language can seem daunting, especially for those who are not native English speakers, but fear not, because in this episode, we're going to break it down step by step so that you can navigate real estate law with confidence. So why is it so crucial to understand these terms if you're a lawyer or a law student? Well, think of it this way. Whether you're drafting contracts, advising clients, or handling disputes, you're essentially building your cases on words. And in the realm of real estate law, these words can be quite complex. But when you understand them, you gain the power to negotiate, advocate, and succeed in your legal career. Our mission today is to make this often intricate legal language as clear as day. We've structured this episode into sections that make it easy to digest, so you can grasp the concepts one step at a time. We'll start with an overview of the most critical terms in real estate law. Then, we'll delve into deeds, mortgages, and zoning laws, demystifying each one. Whether you're an experienced attorney looking to expand your practice, or a law student about to embark on your career, this episode is for you. By the time you're done, you'll not only have a strong foundation in real estate terminology, but also the confidence to use it effectively in your profession. So wherever you are, at your office, at home, or during your daily commute, let's get started on this journey to simplify real estate vocabulary. Together, we'll make sure that you not only speak the language, but also excel in real estate law. Real estate vocabulary made easy. Deeds, mortgages, and zoning simplified. Defining deeds. We're starting our journey through real estate lexicon with a fundamental concept, deeds. Now, what exactly is a deed when it comes to real estate transactions? Simply put, a deed is a legal document that serves as proof of property ownership. It's like the certificate of title to your car, but for real estate. Deeds are crucial because they transfer ownership from one party to another. In the world of deeds, you'll often come across different types, each serving a specific purpose. Let's explore a couple of these types to give you a better understanding. First, we have the warranty deed. This is like a gold standard in real estate transactions. When you receive a property through a warranty deed, it means the seller guarantees clear and marketable title to the property. In simpler terms, they promise that there are no undisclosed claims or legal issues tied to this property. On the other hand, we have the quitclaim deed, quitclaim being one word. Unlike the warranty deed, a quitclaim deed offers no such guarantees. When someone transfers a property using a quitclaim deed, they essentially say, I'm giving you my rights to this property, but I make no promises about what those rights entail. This type of deed is often used in situations where the transfer of ownership is between family members or in less formal arrangements. Now let's dive into some deed-related terminology you'll frequently encounter in real estate law. Terms like grantor and grantee might sound a bit unusual, but they're essential to understanding the parties involved in a deed. We see this a lot in the legal English lexicon. Words that end with OR, sometimes ER, and then on the other side, EE, or we might say double E, such as employer, employee, vendor, vendee. For lawyers, it's very useful to use these terms because it makes it very clear what this person or this party is doing in this transaction or in this dispute. The grantor, ending in OR, is the person or entity selling or transferring the property. They're the ones initiating the transaction. The grantee, ending in double E, on the other hand, is the recipient, the receiver, the person gaining ownership of the property. These terms help distinguish who's giving and who's receiving. Another crucial term is consideration. In the context of deeds, it doesn't mean careful thought or contemplation. That's everyday English. Instead, it means the value exchanged for the property. This could be money, services, or even love and affection in certain cases, like family transfers. We talk a lot about consideration, the other elements of a contract, in our flagship course, Elemental Legal English. Don't forget to check that course out if you want to learn more. So to recap, deeds are the foundation of real estate transactions, serving as proof of property ownership. You'll encounter different types of deeds, with warranty deeds offering strong guarantees and quitclaim deeds offering none. And remember, terms like grantor, grantee, and consideration are essential to understanding who's involved and what's exchanged in a deed. Stay with us as we continue our journey through real estate vocabulary, moving on to mortgages in the next one. Deciphering mortgages. Welcome back to Real Estate Vocabulary Made Easy. In this section, we're diving into the world of mortgages, another critical aspect of real estate transactions. So what exactly is a mortgage? Well, think of it as a loan that helps you buy a home. Most people can't afford to pay for a house with cash up front, so they turn to mortgages to make their homeownership dreams a reality. At its core, a mortgage involves two parties, the lender and the borrower. The lender, often a bank or a mortgage company, provides the money, while the borrower, that's you if you're buying a home, receives the funds to purchase the property. Now let's break down some common mortgage-related terms that you'll frequently encounter in real estate transactions. What makes a mortgage distinct from other loans is the collateral. In other words, it's a secured loan. If the borrower fails to pay, then the lender can claim ownership of the secured property, the house, the real estate. Another example of a secured loan is a car loan. The bank will lend money to the borrower to buy a car. But if the borrower doesn't pay, the bank is going to take back the car in order to get their money. A mortgage is a loan that's backed by the house. If the borrower doesn't pay off the loan, the bank has a claim on the house, on that real estate. Because this is a secured loan, the borrower can usually borrow a lot more money than they otherwise could. Because even though there's a risk they won't pay it back, the house isn't going anywhere. The car might be a little easier to move or to destroy, but it's difficult to move a house, and although it's possible to destroy it, that usually doesn't happen. Usually there's some value left in that house, so the bank is willing to lend more money because of that. They're more likely to get paid back. Now let's break down some common mortgage-related terms that you'll frequently encounter in real estate transactions. First, we have the principal. This is the initial amount of money you borrow to buy your home. It doesn't include interest. This is the amount of money borrowed. Speaking of interest, that's our next term. Interest is the cost that you pay the lender for borrowing their money. Now don't confuse the interest with the interest rate. The interest is the sum of money that's paid in addition to the principal. The interest rate is how that interest is calculated. Usually it's an annual percentage rate, APR. For instance, if you borrow $1,000, the principal is $1,000. If it's at 10% interest rate, after 1 year, the interest will be $100. $1,000 times 10% is $100. So the full repayment at the end of that year is $1,100. You have to pay back the principal plus the interest. Of course, a mortgage loan is going to be a little bit more complicated. There's more parts to it. For instance, it's usually not paid back in 1 year, but in the United States, it's usually 20, 25, even 30-year mortgages. And of course, you're not paying it back at the end of the 20 years or 25 years. You're making monthly payments. So that is also called an installment loan. You're making installment payments. Small payments on a regular basis. An example I often give to my students, if we go to lunch and I borrow $10 from you because I forgot my wallet, the next time you see me, you don't want me to pay you back $1. And then the next time, another dollar. The next week, another dollar. You want all $10. But if you're borrowing $100,000 or more from a bank, they know that you're not going to be able to come up with $100,000 or more next week or next year. And they don't trust you to wait 10, 20, 30 years to pay it all back. They want you to make small payments every month, monthly payments or installment payments. The next term we'll talk about is amortization. This term describes how you'll repay your mortgage over time. In most cases, mortgages are amortized, meaning your monthly payments are structured to pay off both the principal and the interest over the life of the loan. If you look up mortgage calculator online, you can see how this works. Generally, the first payments, the early payments, it's almost all interest, little principal. And then as you pay off the loan, the last payments are almost all principal and little interest. Now let's talk about the various types and structures of mortgages. There's the fixed rate mortgage, which offers stability with a consistent interest rate throughout the life of the loan. If the interest rate is 5%, it's going to be 5% throughout the life of the loan. On the flip side, there's an adjustable rate mortgage, sometimes called ARM mortgage, A-R-M, adjustable rate mortgage. In these mortgages, the interest rate can change periodically, potentially affecting your monthly payments. For instance, a few years ago, maybe a mortgage interest rate might have been 1 or 2%. Two different people take out a mortgage. One is a fixed rate mortgage, the other is an ARM mortgage, adjustable rate mortgage. Well, now that interest rates have jumped up a lot, the fixed rate mortgage is still that 1 or 2%, whatever was agreed when they got the mortgage. It's fixed. It's not going to change. However, the new homeowner that got the ARM mortgage, that interest rate is probably jumped up as well, and it's probably going to continue to jump up. This is one of the problems or one of the factors in the 2008 financial crisis. A lot of people, maybe millions of people, got adjustable rate mortgages, and then interest rates went up, so the amount of their monthly payment went up, and around that same time, the value of the house went down. You had a lot of people that defaulted on their mortgages. They stopped paying because they couldn't afford the payments, or sometimes it just financially didn't make sense to continue those payments. In some areas, you might also encounter government-backed mortgages, like FHA loans or VA loans designed to help specific groups, such as first-time homeowners or veterans, access homeownership. So to recap this section, a mortgage is a loan that makes buying a home possible. You'll often deal with terms like principal, interest, amortization, which are essential to understanding how your mortgage works. Additionally, it's crucial to know about different mortgage types, such as fixed rate and adjustable rate mortgages. Stick around as we move forward, delving into zoning laws and their impact on real estate. If you're enjoying today's episode, please subscribe. It would really help us out if you gave us 5 stars and a review. Remember to go to our website, 4 LegalEnglish, no spaces or dashes, .com. forlegalenglish.com. Check out our blog articles, available courses, in the show notes for this episode.
and I encourage you to comment. At the bottom of the show notes, you can leave a comment or ask a question. This is a great way to practice and improve your legal English skills. Our flagship course that we offer is Elemental Legal English. This is a completely online course that you can complete at your own pace. It has 12 modules, which normally would be a 12-week semester course. There's plenty of learning content, as well as exercises to reinforce what you've learned. If you're looking to improve your vocabulary or understanding of legal English concepts, this is a great course to get started with. If you go to our website, look for Elemental Legal English, and I'll leave a link in the show notes as well.
Zoning laws. In this section, we're shining a light on zoning laws, a crucial aspect of real estate that often puzzles many people. So what are zoning laws? Think of them as the rules that dictate how land and property can be used in a specific area. Zoning laws are like traffic rules for real estate. They ensure that different types of properties, such as residential, commercial, and industrial, coexist harmoniously. Now let's explore the different zoning classifications. There are typically several categories, including residential, commercial, industrial, agricultural, and sometimes mixed-use or special-purpose zones. Residential zones are primarily for housing, while commercial zones cater to businesses like stores and offices. Industrial zones are often reserved for factories and warehouses. Agricultural zones, of course, are for farming purposes. Mixed-use zones allow a combination of residential and commercial properties in the same area, fostering a vibrant community. Special-purpose zones can cover anything from parks to historical preservation areas. Now let's dive deeper into how zoning regulations can impact property use. Imagine you're interested in purchasing a charming house in a quiet neighborhood. However, the zoning laws classify that area as commercial. That means you won't be able to use it as a residence, which can significantly affect your real estate plans. Understanding zoning laws is crucial for anyone involved in real estate transactions. It ensures you're aware of the limitations and possibilities associated with a property. Zoning laws not only affect how you can use a property, but also its value. To recap this section, zoning laws are the rules which govern how land and property can be used in specific areas. Stick around as we continue our journey through real estate vocabulary, making it easier for you to navigate the complex world of property transactions. Key terminology in real estate transactions. In this section, we'll talk about the essential terms you'll often encounter in real estate contracts. When you're engaged in a real estate transaction, you'll likely come across a real estate contract. This is a legally binding agreement that outlines the terms and conditions for the purchase or sale of a property. Understanding the key terminology within these contracts is vital to navigating the complexities of real estate deals. One fundamental concept you'll find in contracts is consideration. We've already discussed this a little bit, but this refers to something of value exchanged between the parties involved. In real estate, it's typically the price the buyer pays to pay in exchange for the seller's property. Next, let's talk about offer and acceptance. The buyer makes an offer, which outlines the proposed terms of the transaction, and the seller can either accept the offer as is or propose changes. When both parties agree on the terms, you have what's called a meeting of the minds, and the offer becomes a contract. Of course, it could be the buyer that makes the offer, or the seller makes the offer. That doesn't really change anything. Real estate contracts often include contingencies. These are conditions that must be met for the contract to proceed. For instance, a common contingency is financing, which allows the buyer to back out of the deal if they can't secure a mortgage, if they can't get the funds. If there are zoning issues, then the contract may be contingent on getting zoning approval. In other words, the buyer wants to change the zoning for this property and is willing to purchase, but only if the zoning authority agrees to make that change. It's contingent upon that approval. Now let's delve into some language you might find in real estate contracts. Phrases like time is of the essence mean that adhering to deadlines in the contract is crucial. Due diligence refers to the research and inspections a buyer should conduct before committing to a purchase. And closing costs are the various fees and expenses associated with the finalization of the deal, when the deal closes. Understanding these key terms, this lexicon, is vital because they shape the entire real estate transaction. They ensure that both the buyer's and the seller's expectations are clearly defined, leading to smoother, more transparent deals. Real estate contracts are the cornerstone of property transactions, and grasping the critical terms within them is essential. Property titles and transfers. In this section, we're diving into the fascinating world of property titles and transfers. When we talk about real estate, we often hear about property titles. But what exactly does this mean? Why is it important? Let's break it down. Property title is ownership of property. Having a clear and valid property title is crucial in real estate transactions because it establishes who has the legal right to sell or transfer the property. Now let's explore the process of transferring property ownership. When someone wants to buy or sell real estate, there needs to be a formal transfer of ownership from the seller to the buyer. This transfer is documented through a deed, a legal instrument that conveys the property title. Convey here meaning to transfer from the seller to the buyer. As part of the property transfer process, you might come across the term title search. This is an essential step to ensure that the property's title is clean and free of any encumbrances or legal issues. In other words, there's no claims on this property. It's a bit like a background check for the property. Speaking of encumbrances, these are claims or restrictions on the property that can affect its value or use. Common examples include mortgages, liens, and easements. Understanding these encumbrances is crucial because they can impact your rights as a property owner. Another vital concept is the chain of title. This is a historical record of property ownership that traces back to its origin. It's like a family tree for the property, showing all the previous owners and any transfers or encumbrances along the way. So in a nutshell, property titles are the proof of ownership, and understanding the process of transferring property is vital in real estate. Don't forget to perform a thorough title search to ensure a clean title. Be aware of any encumbrances and explore the property's chain of title. These concepts may seem complex, but they are building blocks of real estate transactions. The better you understand them, the more confidently you can navigate the world of property titles and transfers. Real estate due diligence. In this section, we're going to explore the critical realm of real estate due diligence. When you're involved in real estate transactions, one term that comes up often is due diligence. What exactly is due diligence? Why is it so important? In the context of real estate, due diligence refers to the process of carefully investigating and evaluating a property before a transaction is finalized. Think of it as doing your homework before making one of the most significant financial decisions of your life. During the due diligence phase, several key components come into play. Let's start with inspections. Property inspections are thorough examinations of the property's condition. These can include structural inspections, electrical inspections, and plumbing inspections, among others. The goal is to uncover any potential issues or needed repairs. Often an independent builder or contractor will come in and examine the state of the building, of the house. In that inspection, they'll determine if it needs a new roof, maybe if there's a problem with the heater or the electricity, or something's wrong with the water connections, or maybe there's something wrong, the building isn't up to code. There's some repairs that have to be made. And then the buyer and seller can negotiate. Maybe the price is reduced, or maybe the seller will have these repaired. And with this information, the buyer and the seller might negotiate. Maybe the price is reduced, or maybe the seller will agree to make repairs. Another crucial aspect of due diligence is surveys. A survey determines the boundaries and legal description of the property. It's like getting a map that shows exactly where your property begins and ends. This can be vital for avoiding property disputes. A big factor for this is how long ago was the last transaction with this property? If it was just bought and sold a few years ago, there's probably a recent survey. but maybe it was in the family for a couple of generations. Maybe there hasn't been a survey in 50 or 100 years or more. Then a survey would definitely have to be done, and it might be end up being a big headache. If a large property is going to be subdivided, you know, into two or more parts, then often a new survey has to be done as well. So why is due diligence so significant? Well, incomplete due diligence can have serious legal implications. If you discover problems with the property after the sale is complete, it can be challenging to address them legally. Incomplete due diligence might mean you're stuck with a property that has hidden issues. If these issues are something that should have been discovered before, the courts might be reluctant to get involved. Therefore, understanding due diligence in all its components is essential for anyone involved in real estate transactions. It's not just about paperwork, it's about protecting your investment and your rights as a property owner. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast and share it with fellow legal professionals looking to enhance their real estate knowledge. Navigating property taxation. In this section, we'll be unraveling the complexities of property taxation in the world of real estate. Property taxes are an integral part of real estate ownership. They provide the funding for local governments to provide essential services, such as schools, public safety, and infrastructure maintenance. As a property owner, it's essential to understand how property taxation works. Let's begin by defining some key terms. Property taxes are taxes assessed on the value of real estate properties. These taxes are typically levied by local governments, including cities, counties, and municipalities. The amount of property tax you owe is determined by the property's assessed value. Assessed value is an estimate of your property's worth in the eyes of the taxing authority. It's important to note that the assessed value can be different from the property's market value, which is what you might sell it for on the open market. These two numbers might be very different. Property tax rates can vary widely depending on where you live in the local tax laws. These rates are usually expressed as a percentage of your property's assessed value. For instance, if your property is assessed at $100,000 and the tax rate is 2%, your annual property tax bill would be $2,000. Property tax bills are typically sent out annually, and they often include additional charges or assessments for specific services or improvements in your area. For example, there might be a separate line item for school taxes, which go towards funding local schools. Calculating property taxes can be complex due to the variety of factors involved, including tax rates, assessed values, and exemptions. Additionally, staying informed about changes in local tax laws and assessments is crucial. Tax laws can evolve, and your property's assessed value can change over time, impacting the property tax liability. Legal remedies and dispute. In this section, we'll explore legal remedies and dispute resolution in the realm of real estate. While real estate transactions are often smooth and straightforward, disputes can occasionally arise. Whether it's a disagreement over property boundaries, contract breaches, or issues with the property's condition, it's crucial to understand the legal remedies and dispute resolution options available in real estate matters. Let's begin by discussing some key terminology. Legal remedies refers to the solutions or actions available to parties involved in a real estate dispute to address their grievances. These remedies can vary depending on the nature and severity of the issue. One common legal remedy is litigation. Litigation involves taking a dispute to court where a judge or jury makes a final decision on the matter. Litigation can be a lengthy and expensive process, but it's necessary when parties cannot reach an agreement through other means. Another option is mediation. Mediation is a voluntary and confidential process where a neutral third party, known as a mediator, helps disputing parties communicate and work towards a resolution. It's a less formal and often more cost-effective approach than litigation. Arbitration is yet another avenue for resolving real estate disputes. In arbitration, a neutral third party, called an arbitrator, listens to both sides of the dispute and makes a binding decision. While it resembles a legal proceeding, it can be quicker and less formal than litigation. The choice of remedy and dispute resolution method often depends on various factors, including the nature of the dispute, the party's preferences, and any existing agreements such as arbitration clauses in contracts. Keep in mind that alternative dispute resolution methods like mediation arbitration can save time and money compared to full-scale litigation. However, the choice of remedy should align with the specific needs and goals of your client. Lexicon. Here's some words that might be difficult or considered advanced from today's episode. If you want to learn more about them, check out the show notes for this episode by going to foralegalenglish.com/podcast and looking for today's episode. Arbitration. Contingency. Deed. Due diligence. Encumbrance. Interest rate. Litigation. Mediation. Mortgage. Property tax. Title search. Zoning. Thank you for joining on this episode, Real Estate Vocabulary Made Easy. Let's recap the key takeaways from this discussion. On today's episode, we embarked on a journey through the complex world of real estate terminology. We explored essential concepts from understanding different types of deeds and mortgages to deciphering zoning laws and mastering legal jargon found in real estate contracts. We emphasized the importance of thorough research when dealing with real estate transactions. We also dove into the world of due diligence, discussing inspections, surveys. Conducting due diligence effectively is crucial to uncover potential issues before they become costly problems. As you continue your journey in real estate law and work towards mastering legal English, remember that practice and persistence are key. Review the lexicon we've discussed today and seek opportunities to apply your newfound knowledge. What questions do you have about today's episode? You can post those questions or any comments on the show notes. This is a great way to practice and improve your legal English skills. You can go to the website legalenglish.com. foralegalenglish.com. You can check out our blog articles and show notes for this episode and check out the episode quizzes. It'd be fantastic if you could subscribe and give us a review. If you could leave us 5 stars and a nice comment, it would really help the algorithm and other people to find our podcast. If you leave a great review, I might even read it on the air. So start writing. The 4 Legal English podcast is adjourned. Don't miss the next docket call.